Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wandering Road Podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, and for today's show, we are joined by Lisa, who actively lives in a haunted house, and she's here with us today to share her stories living in that home. But before we get started with today's show, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us at our email address, twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you, have you as a guest on the show. Recently, we had one of our first listeners, Will, come on the show, and he said he had a good time. So take it from him. Submit your stories to us and join us on one of our episodes. Again, we could be reached at our email address, twroadpodcast@gmail.com. And with that, we'll start today's show. How are you doing today, Lisa?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
We're glad to have you on the show. You know, it's funny, I came across your TikTok page talking about that spirit in that haunted house that you live with. And I was intrigued and I was like, let me reach out and see if you would be willing to come on and share your story.
Yeah, I really didn't expect it to blow up. I guess everyone says that, right? Like they don't expect the video to blow up the way that it did. But she's interesting. Her name is Helen. She is very sweet. My girls know her. My 11-year-old and 13-year-old daughters are not scared of her. And I thought this is a really interesting story because I think so often people are scared of ghosts or spirits or anything like that, and we're not. And I thought that maybe telling her story would honor her a little bit in a different way.
Yeah, that's completely awesome. And we're glad to have you on. And I'm not neglecting you, Dean. How are you doing today, buddy?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, man. I'm pretty sure I am COVID positive. I bought my test this morning that I haven't tried yet, but I shall find out after the show. So good thing it doesn't transmute over the airwaves.
Oh, sorry about that. That's awful.
All right, Lisa, why don't we just jump straight into it? So you currently live in that haunted house now with Helen.
I do.
But do you have any... your earliest experience with like ghost spirits, like just growing up in general, Did your family have any type of beliefs or any experiences that were shared with you?
So this is actually really interesting. So I'm Cuban, and my mom came over from Cuba when she was 6 years old. And the story goes, I believe it's my great grandmother was actually like a medicine woman in Cuba, and police would come to her and say, hey, you know, we're trying to catch these robbers or we're trying to catch these people. Do you have any insight for us? And she would give them clues or whatever. So she was like a modern day psychic, right? And the best story that I have of that is, this one gets told like every Christmas, is I guess they had robbed something or done something and they were missing for days and days and days and they couldn't find these people. And my great grandmother had this vision that they were hiding in this barn in this very remote area of Matanzas, Cuba. And she told the cops and lo and behold, they went there and there these two guys were in like the loft of a barn. And that was like her claim to like, I'm telling you the truth. This isn't just like I'm making up whatever. My brother and I always joke that we kind of have a little bit of that because we will like tell each other things and then they'll come to fruition. So I think it's more of just being open to like the experiences than versus like having tons of haunting experiences or whatever it may be. Helen is definitely the first one that it was more than like just coincidence. Like, oh, that could have been anything. Because when it starts happening over and over, that's when you're just like, it's either haunted or I'm losing my mind. And like, I would like to choose that it's haunted. So that's kind of where we landed. And that's why we are where we are.
I got to ask you, what's your first experience, like real true experience? And you were just saying how you kind of evolved into this, sharing it with your brother and these possible abilities that were transferred from your family. But like, Can you talk a little bit about what was your first true experience and how did it shape you? Or like, how did it make you reflect on the stories that you heard before? And what was just the general atmosphere of it?
You know, there were a few different things that were always kind of interesting to me. We lived in this house when we were growing up in a town called Windsor, New York. And it's about maybe 2.5 hours north of the city. And
hello, New Yorker.
Yes. Okay, good. So you get it. Binghamton, New York, right? That's where we're just outside of. So we grew up in this little house, little ranch house. It had like 4 or 5 acres on it. And I remember my brother always saying that he would see someone out in the corner of the field. Like we had like this open field and it would open up to woods, right? And all the time, I thought he was just like pulling my leg because it's like a little brother thing and just trying to like screw with his big sister or whatever. So he would say that all the time. He would say it all the time and I didn't really believe him. And then one day I remember my brother and I were watching TV. This is like the earliest memory I have of this. And my dad, who is a very like Italian New Yorker, okay? So like he doesn't believe in this hocus pocus. He doesn't believe in any of this stuff. He's just very like flat with all of it. He came up and he was talking to my mom and he said, and I remember it to this day. He said, oh, I saw him downstairs again. And I was like, you saw who downstairs? Like, what are you talking about? And we were just old enough where I felt like my dad could probably tell us about it. And he did in his own way. He was like, well, there was a guy that used to live here, da, 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 da. And then he brought us downstairs. And I swear to you, I had never seen this picture before in the garage. But like, I guess it had been hanging there this whole time. It was a picture of the guy who formerly owned the house. But he would show up. My dad would always catch him out of the corner of his eye downstairs. And then my brother was catching him out of the corner of his eye out in the field. And so that was kind of the first time. Then there were just little things like my brother would jokingly, we wouldn't even be at school yet. And he'd be like, you know, my teacher's going to be out today. Like, how would you know? You know? And like, lo and behold, his teacher was out. Like just little things where like my mom was just like, just stop, you know, whatever. And he would call it like that. And I could be able to do things like that back in the day too, which was really interesting. I don't know if I could do it so much anymore now, but definitely when we were young, it was kind of eerie. And my mom would always be like, these kids are weird, you know, like what is happening? But it was interesting. The other thing I remember living in that house, and this is like such a stark memory for me, I probably think about this like once a month, is I was in my bedroom and the way that it was set up was my bedroom and then there was a TV and there was a like a little TV stand. It was pretty high. It was like my bureau. And I had a hair tie on like this side of the TV stand. And there was no windows open. There was nothing. And I remember just seeing the hair tie just fly across the bureau. And I was like, what was that? You know? And like 13-year-old me was like real dramatic. So I'm like running out telling my parents about it. And my mom's like, it's nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing. But I remember that to this day. Just like little weird things like that happening. Never, you know, like intrusive or anything, but things that you couldn't explain, you know? And I thought that was always kind of cool.
As I'm totally with you, as I get older and I reflect back on my childhood, I'm like, I do remember some strange things happening. And I think there is something to that where you get older and you lose connections to abilities, whether it's like, you know, spiritual or not. I mean, kids are just generally more perceptive because they have less stress and anxiety placed on them. And then they're just generally more aware of things going on. So I'm totally with you. I feel like, you know, that kind of goes away over time. But I wanted to ask real quick. So the gentleman who used to own the ranch style home that you're in New York growing up, was there any like feeling of maliciousness coming from him or was it kind of just like he was just there?
He was just kind of there. Now, I will say a couple years ago, right after my grandfather passed, I went home to my parents' house and I slept in the room and I felt super uneasy. And I couldn't figure out what it was, or, you know, was it just me like not being in my own bed, my own home, like the Helen home or like whatever. And it was really interesting. And then I woke up in the middle of that night and I smelled tobacco, which is interesting because that's something that I talk about in my TikToks is we often smell tobacco at the house. And I couldn't tell if it was whatever. I told my mom about it and she was like, it's really funny that you say that because ever since Poppy, my grandfather passed away, I've smelled tobacco in that room too. I don't know if it was necessarily that guy, if it was Poppy visiting us or like what it was, but that was like the one time that I ever felt uneasy about something. Now growing up in that house, I did have like weird dreams. Like I had one weird recurring dream. I was actually telling my husband about this the other day. And I got to get him on TikTok because he has some weird stories too about Helen and his are like not as like mine are like sweet and his are kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. I'm glad I didn't witness it. But the dreams I would have would always be like those dreams that when you're a kid, you're like frozen and you like can't move, you can't do anything. And those alone are terrifying. And it would always end up being that like I was sleeping in my room and my bed would always, my head would lay so I could see down the hallway. And it was always like I had a feeling something was going to come around that corner, but it never did. So to this day, like I don't sleep in my old bedroom at home. I sleep in like the guest bedroom whenever I go to my parents' house because I still, 37 years old, have the same fears that I did at like 11 with that. So that those are the only things. But other than that, there was never like anything fearful about him. Now, supposedly he is the he and his wife were the ones who built the home. So there were no previous owners prior to this guy. So I'm sure that he probably has some type of claim to the home for sure. And he must like my parents because they're still there and, you know, everything's still hunky dory. So
that's so cool. And I will openly admit, as everyone who's listened to the podcast knows, like I am a open-minded skeptic in these regards. But one thing that we talk about that Chris and I have talked about before is there's different concepts. Like there's residual hauntings where there's like a superimposed image or kind of like a movie playing out that is attached to someone's life. So there's no soul there anymore. There's no actual person. It's just kind of repeating in certain points when they existed based off of energy or whatever. And then there's the actual like, oh crap, we have an actual ghost who is thinking, feeling, and taking actions on us. And the stories that we've heard where people growing up having like spirits and stuff in their house or visions or images, the ones that interact with them are usually hostile because it's like, oh, I guess the presumption is that that person is angry that you're in their home and they want to be there by themselves, and which makes sense if you know, you get older, you live somewhere forever. And anyway, but just the last question I'll ask without diving this into the ground too much is, from what you saw back then, do you think it was more of a residual haunting thing growing up? Or do you think he was actually there? Was he like kind of watching you, or did your dad ever talk about that? Like he looked like, well, it actually seemed like your brother was saying he saw him across a field, like looking at the house. So that almost seems like an action of watching.
Yeah.
And then I guess I'll throw it to the more modern example of Helen. It sounds like Helen is much more interactive with everybody. So can you talk from those perspectives?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for him, it was more of a residual. I think that maybe I was a little sensitive to it. So it made me uncomfortable because I didn't know who he was or why he was there. And I don't even remember having that conversation with my parents as to who he was until I had moved out, like until I was in college. I don't remember having that conversation. So that was interesting. Now, Helen, and this is interesting. I want to kind of tie this back to your point of talking about like, gosh, you look back on your childhood and you're so much more open to it. So I mentioned I have an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old. And actually the story I think that blew up on TikTok was the story about Hazel, my 11-year-old. She was like two or three at the time, maybe three or four. And we had just moved into the house. And if y'all have kids, toddlers, when they're quiet, that's like a horrible thing, right? Like you need to go find them immediately. And she was real quiet. So I was getting ready to go upstairs and I was like making my way up the stairs and I hear her coming down the back stairs. And I'm like, oh, okay. So like maybe crisis averted. Like, let's go see. She came downstairs. She's like very nonchalant. Okay. Like nothing has happened. Like she'd been playing with Barbies. That's what she was acting like. She hands me her water bottle. She's like, can you fill me my water bottle? I'm like, yeah. I was like, so baby, what were you doing upstairs? And we had made a very big point, and people on TikTok didn't believe me, but like we had made a huge point never to talk about Helen in front of the girls because our fear was we didn't want them to be scared of living in the home, you know? And like we value our sleep and like we didn't want them waking up in the middle of the night. So like we were very tight-lipped about it. And she looked at me. And without skipping a beat, she goes, oh, I was playing with Helen. And I was like, oh, so I'm just trying to be like very nonchalant about it. And I was like, well, that's cool. I was like, is she your imaginary friend? You know, just trying to like calm myself down. And she looked at me like I had seven heads. And she's like, no, she used to live here. And she just marched right back upstairs. And it was like, nothing was wrong. She wasn't scared because she went right back to the source without me, right? And she was a timid kid. Like she would make friends with other little kids, but like adults would scare her. So like this was weird. So that happened. That was really bizarre. And then her dad came home that night and she recounted the story to him word for word. Like, you know, because I was like, well, maybe this is just like weird because little kids can be really creepy. So like maybe that's it, but that wasn't it. So that was just one of the big things that happened. And like, she's shown herself several other times like that. My oldest likes to talk about, and this is true because I had to think about it. Every single time we order pizza, doesn't matter, every other thing we could order, completely fine. But when we order pizza and we put it down the dining room table, all of the lights in the house flicker. If we order Mexican, if we order sushi, if we order everything else, that's completely fine. Nothing happens. It is always pizza. And we ordered it like 2 weeks ago because she had told the story. The way that I kind of got the idea to start telling these stories on TikTok is we live in a super historic community. And they did a fundraiser for the Historical Society where they walked people who bought tickets around the neighborhood, and owners who had haunted houses would come out on the front porch and tell their story. And these people were like so interested in our house and our stories. And they were asking all these questions. And I was like, really? Like, people are interested in this? And so that's what gave me the idea. You know, very nonchalantly, my oldest had mentioned like, oh yeah, and whenever we get pizza, everything flickers. And 2 weeks ago, we did it and it flickered. And I was like, gosh, Jill, you're right. Like, I had never noticed that. But it's just little things like that. And I think that they're going to grow up with those memories and like, you know, be able to kind of recount that at some point. But I really hope that we've been very encouraging for them to believe in it and to like be okay with it. Cause I don't ever want them to lose that sense of wonder or like that there are good entities out there that are not on our plane. And it's okay to kind of engage with them every so often. And so that's been kind of a big thing for us. And I think that the girls are taking that to heart for sure.
That's so crazy interesting. I apologize to my co-host, Chris. I'm like stealing all the limelight. So man, do you want to jump in? I have a million more questions, but I want to give you a chance to chime in because I'm sure you got some stuff, man.
I do. We're both native New Yorkers.
Love it.
Where
in New York are you from?
I was born and raised in the Bronx. Then okay. We moved to Queens.
Got it.
And I left for college around 19 years old and never went back because it's so expensive. My sister always wants to go live back there. I'm like, if you're not making like 200 grand a year, like
you can't survive.
No, you can't. No. But what I wanted to ask was, why the pizza? She'd run me out of the house because I love New York pizza. Like
I love pizza. And so it was it's so funny and I don't get it. And it sounds scary, but it's not. And it just like kind of happens. And it doesn't matter what room you're in, the minute it hits the dining room table, it will flicker. We have chandeliers. Like some of them are original to the house. So like everything goes. And a lot of people be like, well, it's because your electrical isn't updated. It's like, no, it was. Because in the late 90s, there was a huge house fire and the electrical all got burned out. So they rewired the entire house. So like everything is perfect in that house. You know what I mean? And we have no issues other than like pizza hitting the dining room table. So like, what am I supposed to do? Call the electrician and tell them that story and expect them to be like, this sane woman is going to like pay me. You know what I mean? So there's no need to get into it.
So you said you live in a historic community and like there's an event where people talk about their haunted houses. That's absolutely fascinating to me.
Yes.
Because I grew up, my mom is Dominican, so okay. I'm half Dominican, and we're island neighbors.
Yes.
Growing up Catholic, my mom was very much like we don't talk to whatever.
We grew up Catholic too. Yep.
Yeah. Even now, none of like my family that are Catholic like want anything to do with it. And it was very much the situation for me that where like my parents, where I grew up, we were pretty young when the stuff started happening, like what you experienced. And they didn't really want to talk about it because it's like, we just moved here. We spent a crap ton of money. We don't want the kids to be scared. So I completely resonate with you on that front.
Exactly. So a few things. Yeah. So it was interesting to me when we found out about my great grandmother in Cuba because we are devout Catholic, right? So for her to be able to be so devout Catholic, but also believe in what she was doing and believe in, you know, all the things that she was doing as far as being a medicine woman. Like to me, that was so fascinating because it was so multifaceted. And that immediately led me to believe like in life, you don't have to be either or, you can be both. And I thought that that was really interesting. And I think that opened up my life a lot, just in general, like knowing that women that came before me did some really cool things. As far as our community, So here's the coolest thing about our community is we are just a couple minutes down the road from Adams, Tennessee, which is the Bell Witch. So if you guys haven't seen the Bell Witch or know about the Bell Witch, it's literally 7 minutes away from us, right? A lot of my employees actually live in Adams. And so for us in our county, Robertson County, Tennessee, hauntings are just another day. Like it is very well believed in. There is an entire festival called the Bell Witch Festival that brings in thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people every single year where they recount the tale of the Bell Witch. It's nuts. So during Halloween in October, I mean, it is lit up with events here. It is unbelievable. And it's something that we do so well and we're so proud of. It's almost like a heritage to us. So the Robertson County Historical Society does a phenomenal job of putting these events on. And that one is they bring up like, I think it's, I can't remember how many stops. It was either four or five different stops in the historic district. And it's a walking tour. So it's like every other block, you're stopping and listening to the people. And the owners will come out onto the front porch and you gather in their front yard and everyone's holding like electric candles. So it's like super creepy. And you tell the story and you're up there for about 15, 20 minutes telling all your different stories. Then there's a Q&A. It's really neat. And to me, that's like, that's how you keep small towns alive. And that's how you keep like the stories going with these. Because if we don't continue the folklore of all of this, I think that our culture will eventually kind of die down. And I was really proud to be on that. I thought that was really neat. And again, it gave me the idea to put them on TikTok and then they blew up from there.
I wanted to do this at some point. I guess I'll just do it now. I was going to wait. But this is a super interesting and good transition. So you're in Tennessee now, which I have to admit, I don't have a lot of opportunities to speak to people who live in Tennessee. But can you talk about, I've never heard of the Bell Witch, and I know you could probably go on for like a half an hour about the details, but like, what is the Bell Witch? And I guess, and I'll open it up as well. Like, are there any other like cryptid or other creepy stories that really resonate or pass through the community down there that you could share that you find fascinating?
Absolutely. In fact, we thought about doing like a podcast just on Robertson County hauntings because there are just so many. Every single homeowner has a story to tell. It's wild. The Bell Witch is really the first documented, truly documented haunting in Tennessee. The legend has it that even Andrew Jackson came down here to learn more about the Bell Witch. And it's really interesting. So the idea is that the Bell Witch was never an actual being. It was an entity. And it went after these folks, the Bell family, John Bell. It went after them and basically terrorized him to death. And he died with his cause of death being a haunting by the Bell Witch. So I think that it's also the only recorded death by a haunting, by a spirit as well. I could be wrong, but I could be wrong about that. The most interesting part is the Bell family still lives here to this day. So I'm good friends with them, Bob Bell, Karen Bell. Those are, you know, their great, great, great grandchildren. So Bob, actually, if you guys want something to watch tonight, Bob did a whole interview with A&E. And there's a whole documentary about him. And he did a wonderful job. And they toured the grounds where John Bell lived and all that stuff. So definitely check out that A&E special. It was super neat. Bob Bell is his name. What was really interesting to me, though, is Bob's recounting of some of the stories that have happened to his family. So Karen is his sister. And Karen, I know her. And she is meticulous. She detail, very detail oriented, lives in a beautiful home, could throw a dinner party for 150 people with like 10 minutes notice. Like she's like one of those people who's just always on. Apparently, when they were living in the house, they had what's called a family Bible. And in the South, a family Bible, because like us in the North have no idea what this is about. But in the South, a family Bible is this massive Bible that gets passed down from generation to generation, right? And it's usually like very ornate looking. And whatever, people pray over it and it's supposed to like hold all of that as it's passed down. So the Bell Bible came from John Bell, right? And it's been passed down, passed down, passed down. Well, when it was in Bob's house, weird stuff was happening all the time. He recounts this story of how like one day he's sitting in the living room and he hears this massive crash. He goes into the kitchen. All of the cabinets are open. All the china's on the floor, but not one piece of china is broken. And he was like, this is weird. This is not normal. A bunch of other small things like that happen. And finally, he says to his sister, not thinking, he's like, hey, do you want this Bible? Because like, I don't know what to do with it. Like, do you want it? And Karen's like, yeah, I'll take it. So Karen takes the Bible. And the minute the Bible left that house, nothing has ever happened in there again. What's interesting is a couple years later, they're doing the A&E special and Bob goes back to Karen. He's like, hey, Karen, I need that Bible. I want to show people on the A&E special, this Bible. And Karen's like, what are you talking about? What Bible? You never gave me a Bible. And they tore her house up and to this day have not been able to find it. And so just like weird stuff like that has happened. Another really funny part of the Bells is they own the oldest funeral home in Tennessee. And they also own several funeral homes now, I believe like five or six, called Austin and Bell. So they're an interesting family. They're really, really cool to be around and to kind of get the history of the hauntings in the county for sure.
That is just mind blowing. I had never heard of even the fact that the families are still around, and it's especially fascinating that you know them. That's, I want to pick at that some more, maybe, at another point in the podcast, but so that's the Bell Witch in a nutshell. And you say that there are a lot of other examples, even in your own town, of people having experiences. So this is kind of just like a boring statistical question, because the reason I'm asking this is because I just got back from Japan and we have some friends who know a lot about like the spirituality and the spirits of Japan and stuff. And one thing that we found interesting about Japan is that the majority of the population there, like something crazy, like 80 or 90% actually believe that spirits are real. And if you tried to superimpose that to say America, I think you'd probably be lucky to get like 50%. Right. So it sounds like you live in a town where a lot of people accept that. So what would you say? Do you think that most people in your town believe this? And do you think that that opens up the aperture more for possibilities of hauntings or spiritual connections, like kind of like connecting to the other side more?
Gosh, I love that question. It's such a well thought out question. Yes, I do believe that. I think it's interesting. So maybe it was like 2 or 3 months ago, the Robertson County Historical Society, I feel like they're like the star of the show here, but they're incredible. They actually did a event where it was like a chili supper and they had a speaker come in to try to debunk the myth of the Bell Witch and say it wasn't true. Right. And this guy had written like a whole story about it, how it was folklore, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there were a lot of people in that audience that were like, cool story, bro. But like, this is 100% true. Right. And it's funny because it's older people going back, Chris, to what you and I were saying, that are super religious. And it blows my mind that like religion and this can like coincide, so much so that there have been churches in our community that have canceled events. Like, you know how they have like, community spaces where like anyone can rent out the event, space for an event, like someone from the Bell Witch or will want to talk about the Bell Witch in one of these churches. And they'll be like, no, you can't have that here. So it's taken very seriously, whether you believe in it or not. I would fathom that everyone at least questions if it's real in this community, because that's what put us on the map. There's even these things called the Bell Witch Cave in Adams that you can go visit, which is just wild. And people are very adamant, like, do not take anything out of that cave because she will come with you. Like it is, and that was like one of the first things someone told me when we moved here was, you know, we were like, gosh, we're really interested in going to see the Bell Witch because supposedly it somewhat influenced the Blair Witch movie. And, you know, that when we were growing up, that was like the scariest movie to me. So to know that I live so close, I definitely wanted to check it out. Yeah. I mean, that was like the first thing people would say, oh gosh, well, if you're going there, I'm serious. Don't do this. And we have people on our team that are just no BS, right? Like they don't really like buy into a lot of like folklore stuff. And even they're like, yeah, no, we just don't mess with the Bell Witch.
But I was familiar with the Bell Witch. I think it's real because a president encountered it. And I was
yes.
Like, ugh.
That's the craziest part to me. And so there's this book. You have to get the red book. That's another thing. You have to get the red book, which is like the authenticated version of the Bell Witch. And that is the book that people around here use like a textbook when you come to town. And they want you to read that book before anything else happens. It's just wild.
Hey, that'd be a good like beginning synopsis for a novel or something. Like someone shows up to a town and no one says anything, just gives them a book. Like, just be
just
careful.
Gives them a book.
You know, like something creepy like that. And walk away.
Rebuild on its own is like pretty much its own like crazy movie. But yeah, for sure.
So yeah, when you were talking about the taking the things from you know, that presumably belonged to the Bell Witch and having her, that's so fascinating because I've lived in Hawaii for about half a decade now, and I continue to hear similar stories passed around, like local populations and people who've been here, like multiple families, generations and whatever. That's like one concept that I haven't heard come from a different part of the U.S., especially the continental U.S. This is the first time I've heard it. But this idea that if you go to a location that has a serious amount of energy or negative or positive, or whatever, you try to take it. Like Hawaiians will always say, like, never take anything from the local beaches because it'll bring you bad luck if you take it away. If you find gold that is attached to some cave or something that may have belonged to some chieftain or something like that, you try to take it away, you're going to have bad luck wherever that goes. So you better go put it back. So that's fascinating. Are there additional points to that story where can you undo it by taking it back to the location it came from? Or is like, once you take it out, are you screwed?
I think once you take it out, you're screwed from what I've told. And it's like weird. Like the stuff that happens and manifests is so bizarre. It's like people get rashes or they get sick or like, it's not like, oh, just a haunting and like, oh, people are screaming. I mean, it's nuts. Like physical things happen to you and it's just bizarre to me. And I don't know if there's like a way to fix it once you do it. I'm not going to test it at all.
Yeah, no. Oh man.
We'll send our in-house skeptic to test it.
Yeah.
Just put it on me. I've already screwed myself. But Chris, this is a good opportunity for you to talk about something she touched on that you've asked before to other people, but the idea that some people who believe, like Christianity specifically, like people who hold themselves to the tightest regard of Christianity, but they don't want to believe or pay attention to the spiritual realm. As soon as they hear anything about it, they just like put up the Heisman block. And that's fascinating psychologically to us, because if you really do believe on the other side, you know, from organized or whatever religion, it's so crazy that you can just completely wall that off and just say, that's not for us. So what is that like in your town? And what's your perspective on that?
Isn't that nuts? So I grew up in New York. Very liberal, very, you know, everyone do their own thing. I live in the Bible Belt now. And so it's a lot different down here. And, you know, becoming friends with people who have a Baptist background or anything that is different from what I grew up with has been really fascinating to learn about and to understand kind of what their beliefs are and where they draw the line between religion, spirituality, whatever it may be. I had this conversation recently with a friend. I was telling her about Helen, and she was like, well, you know, my pastor said that anything that's showing up like that is demonic. And, you know, because if you're in heaven, you're in heaven. There's no like middle ground. You don't like come and hang out with your family for whatever. So if you're still here, there's a problem. Or, you know, I guess she told this story about how there was a little girl that was telling her mom that she was having tea parties with her grandpa who had passed away. And they were like, that's not the grandpa. That's a demon pretending to be the grandpa, right? And trying to get in. And they did like a whole cleansing type thing. So it's really interesting. I don't allude to this. This is actually something I wanted to talk about on TikTok, and I'll probably get to it eventually, is like, what is it like to live in a haunted house that you believe is haunted in the South? Because I think it's a little bit polarizing. And I often talk about like, there's different camps that you fall into. Like, you don't believe me at all. You believe me and you stay away, or you believe me because you want to come over to my house and experience it yourself. You know what I mean? Like, those are the three camps that you fall into. And I think I have one strike against me for being a New Yorker in the South, you know, and now I'm like a New Yorker in the South who's like talking about hauntings in my house. I'm just like really helping the resale value on this home, you know? So I think ultimately it's a really complicated thing because these folks have been in this religious world for so, and in it, not like, you know, I would go to church on Sundays, Catholic. In it, like they do like two or three things a week during the church, then they go Sundays. I mean, they're in it all of their lives. So to be able to believe that, but then at the same time, be able to retell the story of the Bell Witch, it goes back to like my great grandma, right? Like it's so complex and it's so interesting that they're still open to that, but like not to the point where they'll like try to make it a thing, but yet we've made it a thing enough that it's still, the folklore is still existing in 2023. So it's like a whole social experiment down here, and it's pretty mind-blowing.
I was going to save this for the end, but since we already segued into that topic with Dean's question, I wanted your opinion on why you think some people are like that. Because like, I know people personally, and I'm sure like you just said, you do as well, that they are religious. They do believe in God. And the one example I like to give is anyone that has read the Bible, in the New Testament, Jesus casts out legion and casts it into like a herd of pigs. And then they throw themselves off a cliff into a lake and then they drown themselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to annoy anyone or piss anyone off, but it's like, that is considered one of the miracles of Jesus. He performed an exorcism. So by you not believing that those things are real, you're kind of negating what he did. Yeah. So like, what are your thoughts on why people think that way? For me, from my perspective, I think it might be a fear aspect, but I'd be curious to what you think since you live kind of in that area.
Yeah, I do think it's a fear aspect. I think that oftentimes, without getting too into like the theology of things, I have found super religious people, and by religious, I mean like acting as Christians to not go to church every weekend because they are acting the way that the Bible tells them they should act. Be kind, be empathetic, be whatever it may be. And I think that there is a fear that if you can see and spend time with your dead loved ones now, then the final ascent to heaven is a little less glorified for that reunion and that connection. So I do think about it that way. I don't know who's wrong or right, because like, in my mind, and 7 years now, or however many years I've lived with Helen, there's never been a negative thing that's happened to me, right? In fact, I can very easily tell you that some of the best decisions I have ever made, starting this business, becoming an entrepreneur, expanding the business, having, you know, full-time team members now, all of those things were made under Helen's roof. And Helen was a woman who, you know, she was breaking her own barriers. She was like the first female editor of the newspaper. She did all these really cool things in town. And if you're telling me that some of her residual energy in that home hasn't helped me evolve as a female leader, I'm going to tell you you're a liar, right? And I'm also going to be super thankful that that residual energy was there to give me the bravery to do some of these things. I don't think anyone gets to where they are on their own, whether it's through living or dead individuals. So I am of the camp that it is absolutely okay to be religious, to believe in everything that the Bible teaches us, and to also understand that there is a lot that we do not know and we will never know. And that is okay. And it is okay for us to make our own assumptions at the end of the day as to what's happening in our homes, with our kids, all of that stuff. And I think that that's probably the New Yorker coming out in me, you know, because it does sound pretty liberal when I say it like that. But I just don't believe in like, and I feel like this is like the theme of it, right? Like, I don't believe in either or. I believe in and. Like, and I always have believed in and. And I think it's because of my great grandma. And like, there was no one more religious than her. There's no one more religious than my grandmother, my current grandmother, right? Like my Cuban grandmother. That woman says the rosary like 800 times a day for me, right? And like, that's all she does. And so there's no one more religious than my family, yet we all believe. When I talk to my mom about this stuff, she's like, yeah, makes sense. You know, there's no like, are you sure? You know, my dad is kind of like on the fence, but like I said in the beginning, even he was, you know, completely accepting of this guy downstairs. So I think it's just a lot of, in the South especially, there's a lot of like mentality of like, it's this way or that way. And that down the middle road can be really hard to kind of straddle sometimes. But in my opinion, it's a lot more fun to be there. So
This is a good opportunity actually for me because, so I grew up Catholic and I totally understand like most of the common aspects of Christianity, but, I consider myself agnostic, but like I've said this before, but like in the traditional sense as to where like, I think there's something, but I agnostic in the sense that I'm not sure if there is a one true all powerful, all-knowing God, but I do think that there's something. But asking two Christians, you know, it sounds like, what's the actual consensus on when you pass away? Because I know enough about the Bible, and I remember enough to where it's like there's a judgment day. So there's a day in which the divine comes down and judges all humankind, and et cetera. And then that's what kind of sparses out and dictates what level of the afterlife you go to. However, there's also this idea that is still permeating through our society and even through religion, where it's like when you die now, you go to that place right away, because there's been cases of people who pass away and they come back after they're dead and they either went to hell or heaven or whatever they experienced. And I find that fascinating, because like, what's your perspective? In your minds, when you pass away, it seems like, because like you said, there's a trifecta, there's three things, like three things can happen in multi or three dimensional. So you either go to heaven, hell, or you stay here.
Yeah.
So does everybody stay here? Does that kind of speak to the idea that there could be like mimicry going on with like demons trying to pretend like they're a human who died? And you know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. I think that's fascinating.
Interesting. So I have a really dear friend. Back in the day, before I met this friend, I totally believed heaven, hell, that's it, right? Like if you're coming down, maybe you're coming to visit, but like you're not staying here. Although I didn't really have like a formed opinion at that point. Anyways, I have this friend, she's a hospice nurse. And I don't know if you've ever been friends with a hospice nurse, but it is incredible. And so a couple of years ago, I went to it wasn't like a work dinner. I don't know what it was. But anyways, it was a bunch of her other friends who were hospice nurses, right? And they were talking about this also, like, just to like set the scene. It was very like, let's eat some cheese and drink some wine and talk about death. And I was just like in a world that like is not what I'm used to. So I'm just like the little kid that's like, tell me more, you know? And they're just talking about it like it's you and I talking about we're from New York. Like it's just very casual. And anyways, they were all talking about the same thing. And I thought this was nuts. And then I will preface it with, on TikTok, I found other hospice nurses that have no relation to my friend or her team, and they talk about it. So there's something weird here. And the weird thing is that when a lot of people pass away, they like to talk about, or they very often will raise their hands like they're trying to hug someone. Like it's like it's a reaction. And the other thing is, my friend was saying, I know when someone's about to die within about 72 hours because they start talking about seeing their loved ones. And without fail, they have died within 72 hours of that happening. And it's really interesting. And she's even said like pets too, like past pets that have passed on, which is interesting because in a lot of religions, we don't believe an animal has a soul, right? So like, that's curious too. So could it be, you know, if we're getting really scientific, because my brother is a scientist, could we say like, oh, it's the different chemicals in our brains that are producing different kind of euphoric feelings because we're about to go through a really traumatic experience and that's our body of like kind of taking care of us? I think so. I think that's an option. But it's so interesting to hear hospice nurses talk about the experience and it being the same thing every single time. Within 72 hours of someone dying, they're seeing a loved one come to get them. Oftentimes she will hear them saying, oh, my mom is here to get me, or my dad is here to get me. And it's like an 87-year-old man laying in the bed, right? And then they pass. And oftentimes she will see them like as they're laying in bed, lift their arms up, like they're hugging someone. And she's like, it's just so weird because it transcended for her cultures, ethnicities, like even the ability to speak English or other languages. Like we all had the same experience as we were passing. And to me, that makes more sense than there being a judgment day and anything harsh about that. I just don't believe in that. I don't believe that we were put on this earth to do things and then be judged on them one final day. Like I can't imagine that that's true. You know, and so maybe we get to choose. Maybe we get to choose if we want to stay here and guide people who are going to be in our house next time. Maybe we get to choose if we want to go back and be with our loved ones. Maybe we get to be reborn and we choose that. And is it horrible to have a choice? Like, I don't think so. And so that's what I would like to believe, is that when we pass, we have a choice of what we want to do and where we want to be. And the choice is ours to make. And maybe that's what Judgment Day is all about. Like, our ability to judge what we'd like to do next as souls, transcend, stay, whatever it may be.
And one last thing I'll say before I toss it back to Chris is I completely agree with you. I think that's all really deep and beautiful sentiment, but I can't help but go back to, like you say, other people who are ultra religious, who are so close-minded in what they already believe in. So it's like those people die too, right? And unless they have some kind of ultra true epiphany when they get to the other side, they're probably going to keep thinking the same way they thought in this life. And that's going to dictate what they do in their decision. You know, if the, how you laid it out is true, or if that's how it plays out, like that's going to base their decision or whatever. So I think that's fascinating. And you think about it from the perspective too, is like, okay, so let's say you're a Christian, and let's say that you've been a Christian your whole life. You believe in Jesus. You believe that you're going to meet Jesus, and you're living your life life the proper way. You're going to go to heaven. But what if you got to the other side and you met, like, I don't know, Buddha or whatever, any other religion. And then that person or that entity is trying to explain to you, is like, no, actually this other religion is how things work. If you had free will to make your decision, you know that part of Christianity is Jesus is the way, the truth, the light. You can't let that go. So like, there's no amount of convincing or showing that for some people that's going to eliminate. So I think, Chris, one of the ways you explain this happening is like, maybe when we get to the other side, there's like an ultimate opening of an aperture of connection of knowledge that we completely lost touch with when we came to this earth or whatever. But like, how do you approach that concept? Is that something you've ever thought about?
Yeah, it's really interesting. So there's this movie, of course, I'm going to sound like a preteen mom. There's this movie called Soul by Disney. I don't know if y'all have watched it. It is so good.
Great movie. And it's such a great movie,
right? And it's like such a good movie for like adults too. I think about it like that, where like you get to go back up and kind of get like a replay of your life and what you know, what you experienced, what you believed, whatever. And you can like choose from there again, like back to Judgment Day, like you could choose if you judged it correctly and like you can choose what you want to do. And I think that there will be some people who are very staunch in opinions, maybe it be religion or that the house should have stayed here or whatever, that want to come back and defend that. And like, they're not done, like their soul isn't done defending that. Like, I think that we all have soul work that we have to do while we're on this plane. And for me, it's like just helping other people. Like, that's what my business is all about, right? It's just helping. And I think that there are some people that like their soul work is to defend something that their families have done for generations upon generations. Other people is to defend that everything that they've learned through religion. And remember, religion isn't just something that we're being taught by a pastor. Like, it's being something that we're being taught by our great, great grandmother, and then our great grandmother and our grandmother and our parents. And it's something that's so deeply seated in us that whether the entire world believes it to be true or not, people that we love the most and that we have trusted to take care of us and to raise us have told us is true. And that can be so powerful to so many people. So it's kind of hard to be like, hey, like what you're thinking is wild and like absolutely not true, because a lot of people do believe it. And it's just, you know, it transcends so much more than that quick conversation that they and I could have or whatever it may be. But, I think that, again, we get to choose, and what you choose to do in your afterlife or after this life is really important. I'm a huge believer in past lives. I'm a huge believer that we reincarnate. There's so many books out there. There's so much evidence. In Atlanta, actually, which is about 4 hours from me, I'm near Nashville, Tennessee. There's like crazy past life therapists and stuff like that who have done, you know, incredible like scientific work for universities and research for universities. And so you couldn't convince me otherwise. But again, same thing, like someone who's super religious and believes once we're done with this life, we're done with this life, could be listening to this podcast and be like, this woman is a nut. You know what I mean? Like, so I just think like the world would be better, again, like if we did a both scenario, like both things could exist within the same plane, and that's okay. And like, that's what makes the world go round.
Dean, do you have any final questions? I think we're coming up on an hour here, and I don't want to go over on Lisa's time.
Yeah, I think let me give me a second to run through my mind, because I think it'd be so awesome to eventually get you back on here, because it's like you're I have to say, you are one of the most like intuitive, well thought, like well spoken guests we've had on the show. But like, we don't meet many people in our lives where we can actually have an open mind discussion and not have any like hangups about anything. Like, that is so rare.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
Especially in the South, right?
Yeah. But like, I am a one man band down here. Yeah.
I have to say, I'll share something really quickly with everybody listening. I actually kind of grew up in a very similar environment. Like, I loved my family, of course, growing up, and I had a really good childhood. Like, we weren't poor, we weren't rich, but like, we had things we needed, and like, I had love and all that stuff, but I never had anyone in my family. I was always a really deep thinker as a kid, and I would see patterns and things around me that a lot of people didn't seem to see, especially adults. And like we were talking about early in the podcast, like, you kind of lose touch of that when you get older. And I think I did lose a little bit of that, but I try to remain aware of that, having a daughter. She just turned 3. And like, I want to be the person for my daughter that I wanted growing up, someone to listen to and share thoughts with and whatever. But it's so funny that you were just saying about the idea of like choosing your path going forward in life. It kind of reflects the idea that you can choose your path when you die. But I actually came across this crazy idea, and I say crazy in a good way. I'm sure you guys have heard of this, but there's this YouTube channel called Kierkegaard, and I cannot spell it for the life of me. Just start typing in something that sounds like Kierkegaard in Google, and it'll probably come up because it's popular. But they did this video called The Egg. And they do a lot of other videos that are really cool, really well thought out, rooted in science and stuff. And it's cartoony, so it's interesting to follow. But there's this one called The Egg. And they posit this concept that the entire universe is literally an egg in which all of the subconsciousness that exists and, you know, ebbs and flows in this universe is eventually going to learn, regrow, re-experience, and come together again as one entity of conscious. And that is how this idea of like gods are born, or like, you know, some mm-hmm. cosmic celestial being, and how that fits into this idea of the multiverse theory and recycling souls and stuff like that. And I'm so glad that, like, even though I grew up in a religious environment in Western Pennsylvania, and, you know, people who are more closed-minded, it always blows my mind that, like, how can someone like me, and I'm not just one case, I know there's tons of cases out there of like kids or whatever being born into an environment in which they don't seem to fit in to that environment, and they don't prescribe to the religions or the belief structures that their parents believed around them. And theoretically they should have, and I'm sure there are kids are who, but why does that happen to some of us who are seem more open-minded? I would love, Chris, to have a podcast where we talk about that concept more in depth. Maybe we can get Lisa back on and do that. But like, I don't know, like, to close it out, do you have any perspectives on that kind of grand scheme of like consciousness that I brought up?
I think it's so interesting because I feel like from my perspective, I've always been, when I was in Windsor, right? Windsor, New York, I always kind of felt like the odd one out. And it was mostly because a lot of the kids, like, they grew up with each other from day one, right? Like, they were friends when they were in diapers. We didn't move there till I was like 4 or 5 years old. So it was like weird. There was only like 100 and some kids in my graduating class. Like, so it was just always me kind of being an outsider. And I don't know if they would have the same perspective, because I feel like I did a pretty good job like masking it and just being like, everything's fine, you know, and like moved along with it. I think for me, it was more like my family, I felt, was different. Like, my mom being able to tell stories about my great grandma and stuff like that. Like, if I were to say that in Windsor, I'd be deemed as like the weird kid, you know? So it was like, that was kind of the thing. I think that was my first step into spirituality. And then I have always just believed in weird things. I've always believed, like my new thing, we can have a whole podcast on this if you like. My new thing is I have these, like, my dogs are like my other children, right? And I had this dog from before my marriage. Her name was Arrow. She was the best dog in the universe. No one could convince me otherwise. And she passed away. And when she passed away, she had like a myriad of like different things that were wrong with her throughout her lifetime. And it was just like bizarre. Like, we'd have to go to like 20 different specialists. And they'd be like, we've never seen this before. And my husband was always like, you'd find like the dog that we got for free that ended up being like the $1 million dog, because like, we'd have to figure things out. Well, anyways, we get this other dog, and my heart's broken. And I'm like, I just need another dog. Like, Arrow was my soul dog, whatever. So we get this little Cocker Spaniel, little, like, what a little joker. And his name is Barnaby, right? Barnaby, turns out, has the same exact issues as Arrow. And it's, like, weird. And so, of course, now I'm on a path, right? Now I'm like, I will not rest until I figure this out. Well, it turns out, like, supposedly, like, dogs can, like, skip into souls of other dogs and da da da. And I'm like, well, freaking, it's Arrow. Like, she's back, right? And there's, like, weird things. Like, the first night, Arrow would always sleep in a really weird spot in our bedroom. Like, no dog would want to sleep there. It's not comfortable. First night, he sleeps there. Slept there ever since. Like, just weird stuff. Like, and he would know the way around the house immediately when he got home. Like, just weird, weird, weird stuff that's silly and whatever else. And so just stuff like that to me is like, it's different, right? And like, I tell my colleagues this, or I tell a client this, or my friends, and they're like, that's nice, Lisa. That's a really good way that you're coping with Arrow dying, right? And like, but I'm like, no, it's real, you know? And like, so I just think that there is that idea, going back to what you're saying, where like, when we were little, we were kind of scared to be different, right? And you don't want to be outside of the norm. And sometimes when you bring up things that are different, like you just said, like, I recognize patterns that adults didn't. I'm sure when you brought those up to adults, they weren't super open to it. And they weren't super like, that's awesome. Tell me more about it. It was more like, that's great. Let's go on with our day, Dean. Like, and but when you're an adult, though, you're able to find the people that understand what's going on around you, or at least are interested in listening to you and truly listening. And maybe like you find those people, right, that like have been part of your soul family for forever, and you start telling them these concepts and they're like, holy crap, this resonates with me. Well, maybe we all knew each other in a past life for all we knew. And, you know, I'm like opening up some ideas in your head. You're opening up ideas in mine that have been locked waiting for us to meet with each other, you know? And so in my mind, like the journey of being the kid who wasn't totally understood really begins when you become an adult and you get to make your own decisions about who you interact with. And I think that that's probably the most fascinating part. And I love that you guys have done a podcast about this, because to me, this is the beginning. You're going to meet people on here that will change your perception of things, or at least make you question it. And if you're like rock solid in what you believe in, then like, why are you here? Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Like, no one knows what the hell is going on, and that's okay. Like, we're all faking it. You know, we're all trying to figure it out. No one's got like the guidebook to life. And I think it's really cool to hear people's perspectives or like what's worked for them. So that's kind of where I'm at it.
And I want to say really quick that I'm usually the one that doesn't shut the hell up. I want to thank Dean for essentially conducting this, because I was able to sit back and listen to this entire perspective that was truly awesome. And that's the one thing I want to say about that. I love that we started this podcast, and we started it in March. I started it myself, and then I kind of brought him aboard as things started growing. And the one thing I love about this is that you're the prime example of the opposite side of what we talk about. Like, it's still paranormal in nature. It still deals with ghosts, spirits, and the supernatural. But like, the stories that I have is a freaking demon in Queens, New York shoved my aunt out of the bathroom into a closet, like, oh my God, 8 feet. Like, that's my stories.
Yeah.
Here you have stories of your daughter like interfacing with Helen, and it's overwhelmingly positive, and it just keeps us wanting to do this, you know, like talking to people like you with different perspectives and everything like that. Yeah. So I just wanted to say that. And I want to thank you for your time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we know you run your own business, and I think that's really awesome.
Yeah.
When I got an email from your executive assistant, I was like, what the hell?
Like, why is this lady trying to talk to us?
These stories, and like, we have a whole business behind it. I was like, my life's just nuts. Like, if you guys could recommend it. But I'm so thankful that you guys stayed on me and got me on here, because it was just lovely spending an hour with you guys talking. And I am so game to come back anytime. You guys just let me know when you want to have
it. Yeah. We had like a 2-hour discussion on reincarnation. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of episodes ago. Yeah. And yeah, you said you're big into that. So we'll have to get you back on and talk about that stuff.
Oh,
I'm sure if you let us, we'll keep you here for another 3 hours. But
go. We don't want to crush your business in the ground.
Yeah, we don't.
Well, thank you all so much. I hope that you have the best holidays, and I can't wait to come back.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure having you on, Lisa. And why don't you plug your business a little bit? Where can the people find you?
Yeah. So my business is Small Town Startup. We literally exist just to grow small businesses in small towns. We do everything from their marketing to helping them get their permits and licenses and everything set up to making sure that they know how to scale. And you can find us at Small Town Startup on Instagram or on Facebook, Small Town Startup, or you can email us anytime, grow@smalltownstartup.com.
Thank you again, Lisa. And you hear that, people, reach out to her. She's doing good work.
Thanks, y'all. Have a great night.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at TW Road Podcast and follow my TikTok at TWR Podcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.